Carlin is the author of Actively Unwoke, the ultimate guide for fighting back against woke insanity in your life. She has broken multiple nationally covered news stories, exposing the far left ideology in corporate America and government schools, and her work has garnered over 50 million views in the past few years. Carlin does keep dives on the far left socialists on her YouTube channel and exposes what they say when they think we're not listening. So here's Carlin.
All right, I've been setting up my booth all morning, and so do you guys mind if I just like sit on the edge of the stage and we just have a chat? Is that okay? All right. Well, like Derek said, I wrote this here book. It's called Actively Unwoke. I wrote this actually, this book came out last year. And if you are new, and I suspect most of the people here are not, like you have some familiarity with the far left ideology. You might not, like maybe we have a different definition of woke. We can talk about what that is. But this book came out last year, which meant I wrote it 2 years ago because that's just the way the publishing works. About 2 years ago, we were only starting to understand this crazy thing that was showing up in schools called critical race theory. Has everyone here heard of critical race theory? Okay, who wants to try to define critical race theory for me? Aha, and there's the problem, isn't it? You want to give it a try? What do you think it is? See, and this is the problem, isn't it? Yes. Actually, that's actually not a bad definition. It really isn't. Did I see a hand over here? Did someone over here want to give it a try? You, sir? Or you just say. I think that could be a good definition of it. I got someone in the back. You're going to have to shout, my friend. Or you can come up here. Yeah, that's a good definition. That's a good definition as well. So my definition of critical race theory, which you can find in the book, is critical race theory is an ideology that started in academia in the 70s that says racism exists everywhere, in every person, in everything, in every interaction. And the job of the critical race theorist is to explore how, not if, how racism manifests itself in every situation, because racism is always assumed to have occurred. James Lindsay says that critical race theory is the belief that racism is the fundamental organizing principle of society. So I don't really care which definition you use of topics like this. The important thing is I just want you to know that there are many definitions out there. Memorize one, because I promise you if you don't memorize one, someone is going to catch you off guard by asking you that question someday. And like I said, we've been at this for a couple years now, and so the topic is pretty well covered out there. But that was just the starting point for me with the woke ideology. And when I say the woke ideology, I have a different definition than a lot of people. For me, the woke ideology is authoritarianism. That's it. If someone asks you what the definition of woke is, it's authoritarian. Woke can exist on the left and it can exist on the right. This is not a battle between, like, you know, Democrat versus Republican, and I strongly hope there are no Democrats or Republicans here, because really, we'll convert you to libertarians by the end of the event. But it's not about left versus right. It's about authoritarianism versus libertarianism. And woke fundamentally wants to tell you what to think, what to say, what you can't say, what thoughts you can consider, what conversations you can have. They want to quite literally rule you. Right? And so when I first started getting involved in this, I started with critical race theory is really effing bad, right? Pretty basic. If you are telling people to judge individuals on the color of their skin rather than on the content of their character, I learned that was bad growing up. I would hope many of you learned that was bad too. And that was where I started. And then I kind of kept backing out of the ideology. And about 9 months ago, you know, I do these streams every Friday on my YouTube channel called Happy Hour, which is a little bit of an ironic title, because for Happy Hour, we basically watch woke training and then we talk about it. We torture ourselves. Like, I have the most masochistic channel on all of YouTube. I'm actually convinced of this. And so we started doing these happy hour streams where we started actually just going and watching, what are they teaching teachers? What are they teaching in organizations? How is this ideology actually showing up in the world? And that is the basis on which I wrote this book. Well, about 9 months ago, I discovered there's a conference out of Chicago that is literally called Socialism. That's the title of the conference. And I was just like trolling around on YouTube one day, and I discovered that this conference was streaming some of their sessions, and I was like, well, it's Saturday. Why not start Socialism Saturday and watch these sessions and talk about them and laugh at all these silly socialists? And one of the sessions that we watched was called Transgender Marxism. That's an interest. Transgender. We're going to talk a little bit about transgender Marxism today, which is actually a better known name for it is queer Marxism, which crazy. Anyway, my point is this. This all started as a joke for me. I was like, let's laugh at some crazy socialists in Chicago for a weekend. And now I have spent the last 9 months of my life watching more socialist content than any one person should really be consuming. And I've learned some things about the real socialists. And when I say when I'm watching socialist content, I'm not reading. I don't go back and I don't read the philosophy. I know I'm supposed to read all the books when you're a libertarian, whatever. I don't read the books. What I do is I go and I watch their trainings. I watch their classes. I watch how they interact with each other. I will actually like infiltrate their meetings and just watch what happens. And that is how I have developed my understanding of what the farthest left of the far left believe, what they're doing, what they're talking about. And the thing that scares me the most about these people is that when we started going back and watching socialist content from 3, 4, 5 years ago, those are quite literally the talking points of the Democratic Party today. And so sometimes when you talk about this far left ideology, you it can be funny, right? Oh, you know, real socialism has never been tried, ha ha. Like, why are they selling stuff if they're socialists, ha ha. But the fact of the matter is these people are not only lecturing and sharing their ideas at major universities, including the Ivies, all over the country, but they are actually influencing the political direction that the country is going in. And so this is why I think that watching and investigating socialism is an interesting thing to do, because it's kind of like we get a precursor to where all of this is going. And I'll tell you this, it's fucking terrifying. It really is. It is terrifying. It is way more dystopian than anyone has any idea. If this is not a world that you live in, it is crazy. And so we're going to talk about some of the crazy things that I've learned. You know, I started this with critical race theory, and I want to make sure the connection is clear for people about why we start from critical race theory and then we then get to socialism. Because critical race theory is just Marx with race as the fundamental organizing principle. That's what all this is. Anytime you're hearing talk about race, whiteness, queer, anything related to trans issues, and this is not about transgender people, that is a separate thing. I'm talking about the activists. All of this, when you back out of it, it fundamentally goes back to Marx. You know, they figured out when the Frankfurt School came to the United States, which happened in about the 1930s, and what they did is they set up shop at Columbia University. Columbia University has a college of education called Teachers College. Teachers College graduates the most woke teachers that are teaching kids today in public schools. They are flat out Marxists. And so basically they started by taking over like Columbia and that unit, and then they expanded out. They took over the colleges and the universities. This is a long march through institutions, right? When they took over the colleges and universities, they then took over the schools of education. What did they get when they took over the schools of education? They got to train the teachers, right? And this has been going on for like 50, 60 years. I think that they reached a critical mass of about 90% of teachers that are teaching in public school today being fully indoctrinated into this in the colleges of education without even knowing what they were being taught. I think they reached the critical mass of this in about the 90s. Right? Because I've done a lot of research, and I have a wonderful community of people that help me do this research into how schools are integrating equity Anytime you hear the word equity, think Marxism. How schools are integrating equity into their school districts. And what we started finding is round about 2007, 2008, 2009, that is when the most forward-looking school districts, like your Portland, Oregon's, your Seattle, Washington's, your Cambridge, Massachusetts, places like that, that is when they started formally integrating equity, which is Marxism, into their curriculum, into their administration, and now it's virtually solidified throughout the public schools because they capture the institutions first, they train the teachers are now everywhere, and it is an unfixable problem. I just heaped a lot on you. Let's back up. So what are some of the things that they're talking about? Well, how many of you have read the Communist Manifesto? Got a couple, okay. How many of you read the Communist Manifesto in the last year or so? A couple intrepid students back there. You all need to get a copy of the Communist Manifesto and read it. And you can get it for free on the internet. They're socialists. They give it away for free. Download it, read it. It is a short read. Here are some of the things that they're talking about in the Communist Manifesto. The one that I see come up the most often in their presentations and in culture nowadays is abolish the family. This is a real thing. They quite literally want to abolish the biological family. Now that sounds crazy, doesn't it? Who would want to abolish the biological family? Well, does anyone have a guess about why they want to do that? That is part of it. He said you want all focus to be on the state. So that is absolutely true. They want nothing between you and the state. They don't want you to have biological kin. They want care to be provided by the community rather than by biological family members. Does anyone else have any idea about why they might want to abolish the biological family? Yeah. To eliminate emotional ties. It's even more fundamental than that. What was that? Prey on the kids. Yeah, they definitely want to do that. We're going to talk a lot about that. So I'm wearing this shirt called Be Bourgeois, right? This is a shirt that I made for my Unwoke art store, and there's a very specific reason I made this shirt. Does anyone want to guess what bourgeois means in the context that we're talking about right now? Yeah, in the back? Say it a little louder. Richer upper class. Well, that's what people think it means. And right there? Means of production, closer. What is that? So like a proper upper crust kind of thing? Okay. So in this context, when the socialists are talking about who the bourgeois is versus the proletariat, there is one thing that distinguishes them. Private property. Private property ownership. The bourgeois believe in private property. The proletariat does not. They believe it's all about the community. So let's go back to abolish the family real quick. They want to abolish the family because they don't want your children to be considered your property. They want your children to be considered the property of the state. This is not theoretical, guys. In the Communist Manifesto, the section where they talk about abolish the family, you know what they talk about in the very next paragraph? They say, we're going to abolish the family, and how we're going to do it is we're going to take over the schools. And that's how we're going to do it. And that's exactly what they've done. Now, there's other reasons that I want people to really take this seriously. There was a conference a couple months ago at the University of Connecticut Law School with the brightest legal minds in the country coming together to say, how can we dissolve parental rights in this country because parental rights are not in the best interest of the child. In the past month, there have been op-eds in the New York Times, the New Yorker, the Washington Post, another big publication that I can't remember the name of, but I feel like it's like The Spectator or something like that. It might have been The Atlantic. How can we get rid of parental rights? This is not theoretical. This is actually happening, and this is one of their favorite topics to talk about. about 2 months ago, I ended up, so because I'm crazy, right? Like I have a weird fascination with these socialists. And I was like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go to a socialism conference. Why not? I've been watching socialism for 9 months, at least once a week on the internet. Now time to go into the belly of the beast and go in real life. And so I went to a reproductive justice conference at Hampshire College, just a short hop, skip, and a jump away. And these were the people that were running this conference were legitimate socialists. How do I know they were socialists? Well, the former president of Hampshire College was in the opening keynote breakfast panel, and she denounced capitalism from the main stage in the opening keynote. Huzzah. And so I spent the full day with these people just like talking to them about what they, and they thought I was one of them because, you know, I kind of can look like one of them if I really want to. And I was wearing a mask and everything, so I was like totally incognito. And I spent the entire day with these people talking about not just reproductive justice, because the thing of it is that's really funny is they're now overlapping everything with the trans and queer ideology, okay? I want to be very clear when we start getting into the topic of the queer ideology, and this all relates back to abolish the family and what the socialists want to do. I don't care if people are trans. I don't care if people are non-binary. I don't care about drag queens. I don't care about any of these culture issues that people get all upset about. That's going to make half the room upset with me, and then half the room are going to agree with me. I don't want to get into a discussion about that. The point is that queer, do you know how queer used to be an insult? Used to be back in the day, right? Does anyone want to guess when queer stopped being an insult? 2016. What happened to make queer stop being an insult? Gay marriage was legalized. So, in 2015, gay marriage was legalized with a Supreme Court decision, right? All of these activist organizations that had been fighting for gay rights, which I agree with, this is how I got into politics back in the 90s, they no longer had an issue to fight about. And so at that point, the entire movement got hijacked by queer Marxists that were coming out of this socialist far-left ideology, and they reclaimed the term queer to make it a good thing. Queer is why everyone is non-binary now. Queer is why people are using she, they pronouns. Queer is all about disrupting the norm, destabilizing the system, and it is fundamentally a political belief, okay? This all relates back to abolish the family and Marxism and the socialist conference that I went to, because queer is now the number one way that they are pushing this ideology onto people, starting when they are quite literally in elementary school. The difference between queer and trans. Trans people don't need to be queer to be trans, right? And queer people don't need to be trans to be queer. They don't need to be anything to be queer. The only thing you need to do to be queer is declare that you are. Has anyone wondered why we suddenly saw an explosion in non-binary people? Did we always have this many non-binary people running around? Has anyone noticed this? I mean, you can look at school surveys and see that between 30 and 50% in your average urban high school of kids are self-identifying as genderqueer, gender nonconforming, non-binary, gender fluid. Anything that's basically not like a cis person, which is just a normal kind of like, well, I shouldn't say normal because like trans people are normal too, but like, you know what I mean? Like that, if you're not like identifying as, you're not identifying as like, the gender you were born with, whatever. The reason that this is happening is because, again, the Marxists took over the teachers' colleges, and now in all of their teacher trainings, in all of their conferences, they are pushing the queer Marxist ideology onto these teachers who are then teaching it in the schools. And this has turned into their number one focus lately, is to get people to buy into this idea of what of a queer ideology. The four primary goals of these people that I always try to get people to wrap their heads around, if you want to understand what's going on in the world, is this. They want to gain as much power as possible. Power can be gained by getting elected to a position. It can be gained by getting appointed to a position. It can be gained by getting the soft power of influence, things like that. However, they want to get they want to gain power over people's lives to be able to control how they think, how they show up in the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Once they have that power, they use that power to destabilize the system. If you've ever wondered why the left always seems to be on the side of chaos, they always seem to take the side of the villain. They have the fiery and mostly peaceful protests that caused $2 billion worth of property damage in 2020, right? Why are they always on that side? Because destabilizing the system is their goal. That is what queer Marxism, queer theory is. It is designed to destabilize the system, to go against all societal norms, to disrupt all societal norms. That is the stage that we're in right now, okay? Why do they want to do this? Why do they want to destabilize the system? Well, you can't bring Marxism to the United States if you don't cause people a lot of pain. You can't have a revolution if you are not fundamentally causing people pain to make them question, why are we doing things the way that we're doing things? And so they're basically trying to cause a whole bunch of problems, which they are doing quite successfully, I would say. What are they then going to do once they cause people enough pain to start asking questions? They're going to say, capitalism is to blame for all of these problems. Capitalism is always the enemy. You know, going back to critical race theory, people think that the number one enemy of critical race theorists is white people. It's not. They love white people who agree with them. Who remembers Robin DiAngelo? Anyone know that name? Yeah, a couple people. Robin DiAngelo wrote a little book that was a bestseller for a really long time called White Fragility. Was anyone forced to read this book? I'm sorry. I read it. I descended into that was my first introduction to critical race theory, was reading White Fragility, like cover to cover in like a day and a half. I descended into madness. I'm not even joking. So, but my point is, Robin DiAngelo is a white woman. She is very white, and they love her. They love white men. When you hear the term whiteness, that's code word for capitalism. Okay? Every time they say whiteness or like white supremacy or racism, what they're really saying is bourgeois. What they're really saying is the capitalist. Who owns the power structure? Who owns the private property? Things like that. Because socialists speak in code, so they are the only ones who can understand what the ever-loving F they're talking about, unless you spend a lot of time watching them and then you learn how to speak their language. So they're going to gain that power. They're going to cause a lot of problems. That's going to destabilize the system. Then they're going to blame those problems squarely on capitalism. They're going to get a whole bunch of people riled up against capitalism, like, why is capitalism causing us all this pain? And then they're going to look, go, hey, how about Marxism? How about we try that? Because real Marxism has never been tried. We'll get it right this time. We promise. Pinky swear. That is quite literally what they're doing at all these events. That is what they did at the Socialist Reproductive Justice Conference that I went to. That is what they do in their presentations when they're training each other. That is how they talk to each other. These are the things that you need to memorize if you want to understand it. And I promise you that once you memorize these four things and you look for them, every time there's some big wacky news story of someone doing something crazy, or this is a great month in terms of like looking for it in like the pride parades and all of the gay pride stuff that's going on, look for anything related to queer. Gain as much power as possible, destabilize the system, attack capitalism, usher in their Marxist utopia. Those are their four primary goals at all times. All right, I want to make sure I leave a lot of room for questions because I'm sure that I'm kind of going a little round in circles here, and I'm sure people have specific questions, and I want you to know there's going to be time for that. I do want to tell you a little bit more about the Socialist Reproductive Justice Conference that I went to, because this was one of the most wacky experiences of my life. So, one of the things that they had at the Socialist Conference was I got to go on a tour of how to have my own self-managed bathroom abortion. And listen, there are people on all different sides of the abortion discussion. And I want you to know, like, I'm pro-choice. I legitimately am. I think that's an important right to protect. I understand why people would be pro-life, especially now that I've gone on the self-managed abortion tour to learn how to have my own bathroom abortion. So I'm not making a political statement with this. There are very valid reasons to either be pro-choice or pro-life, right? What I want you to hear is that the queer Marxists, whose ultimate goal is to abolish the family, are taking abortion to a whole next level that is, pardon my language, batshit insane. So they actually took over the faculty lounge at Hampshire College. And I have pictures of this if you want to go to my Substack, which I have cards that will give you the link to my Substack if you want to pick one up and check it out later. But I have photos of everything I'm about to tell you. They took over the faculty lounge, and when you enter into the self-managed abortion tour, first they have you sit on a couch, and there are all sorts of books by Angela Davis, like on the coffee table. And Angela Davis is a communist, for people who are unaware. She is one of their guiding light rock stars. And you had to sit down and talk about all the reasons why a woman really should have an abortion, because, you know, having kids is really hard and they cost money, and really it's just so much more convenient just to have an abortion and just be done with it. Don't worry about it. So they're trying to prime you right off the bat. They also tell you, you know who has more abortions than anyone else? People with kids. You want to know why? Because the system does not allow them to have the financial resources to raise the kids they already have, and so really their only choice is an abortion. Then we moved into the kitchen, and the kitchen is where we were offered a snack on the self-managed bathroom abortion tour, because you might get hungry. And in fact, the tour guide encouraged us that if you know someone who is having an at-home self-managed abortion, maybe you should make them a nice gift basket. Because when you're having a self-managed abortion, it's important to be comfortable, and you should make them a gift basket that has tea and snacks and maybe a nice pair of pajamas and a nice playlist for their iPods so they can relax. Because, you know, this process of bleeding out your child into the toilet, it's going to take a couple of days. And so you might as well be comfortable and kick back as much as you can and relax. And so we were actually given a list of, like, if you're going to make a gift basket for your friend doing this, here are all the things you might want to put in your gift basket. Then we moved into the bedroom, and the bedroom again was like, make sure you're lounging and taking care of yourself and all that, and this is a beautiful process of aborting your child and all these things. But where I really started to perk up, if the gift basket wasn't enough, was when we got to the bathroom, and they did actually have a bathroom that they had built out. And because that's what, like, a self-managed abortion is, right? You take these pills, and then you spend a lot of time bleeding out the clump of cells into the toilet, except you're not supposed to look in the toilet when you do this, because the clumps of cells aren't just clumps of cells, apparently. They have, like, you know, body parts and things like that. They were wearing t-shirts that had the names of the self-managed abortion pills, just in case you needed reminders about what those were. They provided you with guides about where these things are legal, and they're definitely not giving advice on how to have a self-managed abortion, because they would never do that, because it was actually illegal where they were having this tour. They were just giving us information. So we go into the bathroom. Sitting by, there's a physical toilet, and there's a stool right next to the toilet. And on the stool is a sign that says, abortion doula. Has anyone ever heard of an abortion doula? No. No. Oh, in the back? Yeah, okay. Couple people. So doulas traditionally are people who help women through the process of having a child. The job of the abortion doula is to sit next to you while you're bleeding out on the toilet, to hold your hand and comfort you as you are going through your self-managed bathroom abortion, and to take care of anything that you might need, like get you more tea or whatever. So that was a little perturbing to me, I have to be honest. And again, as a pro-choice woman, I was like, this is a little extreme that they're trying to make this seem like a beautiful, peaceful process. But that was nothing compared to the self-managed abortion shrine that we saw after, because after you have your bathroom abortion, you then go, and I swear I'm not making this up, I have photos, you then go and you worship at your abortion shrine. And the abortion shrine is a little table that has crystals and statues and a nice rug and pillow because you're going to kneel in front of your abortion shrine. And some people asked me, they said, Carlin, are you sure this wasn't like in Japan where they have their abortion and then they go and they kind of like honor the soul of the baby? No, it was not like Japan at all. Do you know how I know that? Because one of the things that they had on this shrine was all about how you're loving yourself in this process. There's also a fertility goddess on the shrine, by the way, which is like next level crazy if you think about it. But this was quite literally a shrine to worship yourself after your self-managed bathroom abortion. And these people are giving this, and I can't quite describe the energy of I watch dystopian things for a living, right? I feel like I've got a pretty thick stomach for this stuff. I got to tell you, by the time we got to the self-managed abortion shrine, and after we visited that, we were supposed to create posters about all our feelings about the tour we had just been on. I ran out of the room. I could not do it anymore because this is a death cult. That's what it is. It is a death cult. They are quite literally worshiping death. And the reason they are doing this is all going back to destabilizing the biological family. It gets even a little bit crazier, and then we're going to open up for questions. You might ask, well, Carlin, if they're just all going to abort their kids, isn't socialism going to die out eventually? If they're all just having these abortions and they're destabilizing the family, isn't it just going to die out? No. No, it's not. For two reasons. Number one, remember, they've already taken over the schools, right? They have the public schools. That is not changing in any of our lifetimes. If any of you still have children in government schools, I'm going to beg and plead with you to get your children out of the public schools. If you want more information about that, tomorrow at 5 p.m., that lovely lady right over there is doing a class in the 101 room. She's going to tell you how the government schools literally transitioned her daughter. Socially transitioned her daughter, had to spend, like, how long do you have to spend deprogramming her? 6 months deprogramming her from what the government schools did. So that's going to be tomorrow at 5 p.m. in the 101 room. But that's not the only reason that that this ideology is not going to die off. How does a population continue to grow if they have aborted all their children and they're abolishing the biological family? Through surrogacy. They want all children to be born via surrogacy. I fangirl over some of these socialist activists because they're so crazy that sometimes I'm like, you're just like my favorite. And my favorite socialist activist at the moment is a woman named Sophie Lewis. Sophie Lewis has written two books. One is called Abolish the Family. The other is called Full Surrogacy Now. Sophie Lewis works at the University of Pennsylvania. She has lectured at Brown University. She just lectured at the Andrea Mitchell Center for Democracy at the University of Pennsylvania. She lectures in the UK all the time. This is like a legitimate person that you know, is making waves in this. Surrogacy is the option they're going towards. They are trying to make the process of having a child seem like it is a life-ending process for women. And wouldn't it be better if the community just cared for all the children? Because then mothers are not burdened with the unpaid labor of being mothers. They literally do say that. This is also a thing called social reproduction theory, where they're thinking about how they're going to reproduce the worker, because they need to create more workers if they're going to create their socialist utopia. But one of the things that, this is the most dystopian point I'm going to leave you on, and then we'll open up for questions and maybe have a little conversation. One of the ways that they're trying to figure out how to gestate children, I am not making this up, this was in a published medical journal. They want to gestate children in the bodies of brain-dead people. I'm not making that up. Not just women. They're pretty sure they can do it with men, too. It's about attaching it to the liver or some such nonsense. So So brain dead men can get pregnant too, guys. I mean, congratulations on that. But this is, I mean, there are also all sorts of other things. They're making a lot of investments into these birthing pods that, by the way, pro-life people are really excited about these birthing pods. They're like, we'll never have to have abortions again. We can just put them in the birthing pod. No, no, no. You are literally ushering in your own destruction if you do this. Anything related to queer, anything related to children, anything related to any issue around the family, they are pushing all their resources towards this one goal because this is the ultimate destabilizing force that will make us all dependent on the state. Have I scared you guys to death? Yeah. Hand. They can literally breed their own armies. That's right. So I've just thrown a lot at you guys. I have video on my YouTube channel to back up every single thing that I've said. If people think I'm just like a crazy lady up here making this up, I promise you I'm not. I have clips of all of this. But I know that this is a lot, and I know that this is venturing into the realm of crazy town for a lot of people. And so I want to just do a quick pause and see if people have questions about any of what I've just talked about, or I can keep talking. Yeah. No, I haven't heard of that book. Yeah. So I hear what you're saying. So the comment was about, what was it, Libertarian of the Gods? Is that the name? The Return of the Gods. So the reason I don't look into stuff like that is because my work is focused on things that are happening right now in the real world. I don't like to focus on the theoretical because the theoretical may happen, the theoretical may not happen. That's why it's theoretical, right? So I only focus on what I can actually see, what these people are talking about, how they're speaking to each other. Yeah. Maybe, but maybe we can have that discussion offline. That's okay. Does anyone else have questions? And there's a microphone up here, just so everyone else can hear you. Sir.
Yeah, I was just checking the microphone. Yeah, what was the name of that lady? You said Sophie?
Sophie Lewis.
Lewis.
She's a nice redheaded lady.
Okay. And then the other thing, the whole gestating children in brain dead people?
Yeah.
Where can I find information?
So if you go to, okay, so go to my Substack. My Substack is Karlyn, karlyn.substack.com. And I did an article on this, and that will link to the journal article itself. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, I have receipts for everything I just said. Come on up to the mic, guys, just so other people can hear you. Speak right into it.
Solutions.
What's that?
Solutions.
Solutions. Oh, gosh. Maybe. Okay. So here is the short answer. We have got to get our shit together. That's the God's honest truth. Because, listen, libertarians spend more time fighting with each other than we do organizing and fighting back against these people, and that is why we are in, quite frankly, the position we are in, where we have to come to a campground like this to actually do what we want to do. I am not joking when I say that all of the drama, all of the bullshit, all of the infighting, we are never going to get anywhere as long as people are buying into this and are at war more with each other than they are with them. Because these people are organized. For all of their faults, they are constantly, and I mean constantly, putting on classes, teaching people about this, organizing. When I went to this conference, I sat in on two sessions where they were quite literally teaching people how to do opposition research. This is like, we don't learn these things here. We don't know how to do, well, I mean, I know how to do these things, but a lot of people don't know how to do these things. So, like, that's number one, is we need to start putting, listen, I can be a little bit of a controversial figure for those of you who have followed me. For those who haven't followed me, don't worry about it. But this is the God's honest truth. I will put all personal bullshit aside to work with anyone that wants to actually focus on being productive in the real world. I will not coddle people's feelings, but I will work with anyone. And I think that that is the attitude that people need to have, because quite frankly, we're running out of time. The schools are gone. They're gone. There is nothing that we can do to fix them. School choice is not going to fix the public schools because the problem is not at the public school level. The problem is one level before that with the teaching pool. 90% of teachers that are coming out of the colleges of education are indoctrinated into this ideology. So you can send your kid to the school down the street, you can send him to the one three towns over. It is not going to fix the problem because it is the same teaching pool, and that is not something that we can fix. This is not a problem that will be fixed in our lifetime. I think that all of our resources, if I were the ruler of the world, or maybe had a couple state reps here, Tony Leakes, I don't see you sitting in the back, I would say that defunding the government schools needs to be our number one priority. Everything else needs to take a back seat to that. And if we aren't working on that, then we are lost. Gabs.
Give them a practical example of a solution.
Pull your kids out of government schools. Practical example. Ma'am.
Could you please repeat the four things to memorize about socialism?
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, guys, make sure you subscribe to my Substack if this is interesting to you, because these are concepts I'll go over time and time again because I know I need to do that. The four goals of the woke left are as follows. Gain as much power as possible. Destabilize the system. Attack capitalism. Usher in their Marxist utopia. Yeah. Yeah, come up to the mic if you're going to ask questions, because I'm having trouble hearing, and I know that other people can't hear as well, so I appreciate it.
When you're talking about people who are, like, propagating the socialist agenda, when you say, like, they, are you referring to, like, farm-grown worker drone socialists, or is there some kind of patient zero socialist that you're referring to?
You know, that's actually a really good question, and this is a research project that I'm kind of like reverse engineering out. I think that most people who are pushing this ideology are useful idiots, for lack of a better term, or useful innocents, if we want to be a little bit nicer about it, because I really do believe that most of the people pushing this ideology have not thought through to the logical conclusion of what they're pushing. And so your question is a little bit hard to answer, because there are absolutely true believers. Their activists are their heroes. You know, sometimes people think that, like, Rachel Maddow is the hero of the left, or, like, AOC. These people think that AOC is a corporatist, okay? They don't like her at all. Their activists are their heroes. So those are the people that I primarily look at. Sir.
So for those of us that have been exposed to this whole situation for decades, I think you could agree that it's all about inclusivity, right?
No, I would not agree with that.
Well, if you look at the LGBTQ...
Nope.
It started...
It's only the Q. I know exactly where you're going, sir. It's only the Q. It's not the LGBT. It's only the Q.
What did you say? It's only...
It's only the Q. What's happened is... And I understand why people don't understand this, because I've only recently put this together. What has happened is queer has hijacked LGBT. Queer is what we need to be concerned about. And people are confused about that because they see so much overlap between queer and LGBT. But the reality is that LGBT are mostly just normal people who just want to live their lives and be left alone. That's the reality. The people that you need to worry about are the queer activists. They may not call themselves queer Marxists, but that's what they are.
Would it be helpful if the first three letters sort of disavow the Q?
No, because they should not disavow. Well, actually, you know, no. Actually, yes. I apologize. Yes, the LGBT needs to disavow the Q, but not separate the LGB from the T, because again, trans people are just—they're just trying to live their lives.
So, in line with what we're discussing here, language is very important.
Absolutely, that is a key factor.
So, I want to suggest adding two more letters, because the queer movement, no, be with me here for a minute, okay?
Yeah, okay.
We each have
a
voice.
All right.
I know you've got a bigger microphone, but we all have a voice. When the word queer comes up, or LGBTQ, and I'm with friends or others, I say, oh, LGBTQPZ. And they say, PZ? I say, yeah, pedophilia and zoophilia.
I know where you're going with this, but respectfully, I'm going to have to disagree because A, we can't change their language. B, it makes us look crazy. It's also not accurate.
I think it's crazy that pedophilia is being accepted culturally.
I think it's crazy that no one has mentioned kids and you're bringing up pedophilia.
That nobody mentions what?
No one has mentioned like sexualization of kids and you're bringing up pedophilia. That's what I, listen, I'm going to be really blunt with you guys. I left the left after being a Democrat for 20 years. I talk to a lot of groups that are similar to this. I will say that you are not going to win any independents that are not fully like at an event like this like we are. You're not going to win independents. You're not going to win disaffected lefties if every single time you're talking about LGBT, you go, pedophilia, groomers. And I say that as someone that has exposed more real grooming in the school than almost anyone in the country. It really does make us look crazy. And I think that we need to be, I think that what we should be striving to be is much more nuanced about our language. And in teaching people, this is the difference between Q and LGBT. That's my personal preference. You might see it differently and you can try it differently and you can see how many votes you'll get from that. And I guess we can compare notes.
I mean, you spoke about appointees and the Q movement moving into power through election or appointment. Wasn't one of the recent appointees a zoophile?
I mean, maybe, but
yeah, this guy was a zoophilia. He like did it with animals or something. So
well, no, I mean he's at Penn. That's at Penn State. So
wow, so much to learn.
And he wasn't really even involved. He was just a sick guy. Sometimes people are just sick. Anyway, maybe we can continue the conversation offline. But I want to have our illustrious state rep.
I'm not going into the state rep business. They're just a clarification. So in this context, what does Q or queer mean? Because, you know, going back to when I heard the term, it was the same as homosexual.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean, so this is a great question. And I completely understand why this is confusing for people because it was confusing for me for a long time too. Queer is not, okay. So where this gentleman was correct is that language is the number one tool that these people use to try to confuse people, right? That's why whiteness means capitalism. It's a language trick. In the same vein, they're doing the same thing with the term queer. They want us to think it's about lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, what have you. That's not what it is. The very definition of queer theory, which again, if you think like critical race theory, this is just like the queer version of that. Everything is looked at through the lens of queer. The definition of queer theory is pushing against the norm of society. So it is anything that is pushing against what the norm is. You don't have to be gay to be queer. You don't even have to be, like, I am a straight white lady, and if I declared I was queer today, some of these people have actually told me I'm queer because I'm a more masculine white lady. I don't act like a girl, and so that makes me queer, apparently. But it really is against pushing against what we believe are the norms of society.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Regarding what you were saying about the horrifying stuff you said about home managed abortions, the kind of the emotional manipulation around that is that really very different from that being happening in a clinical environment?
This is a great question. So the question, if people couldn't hear, is like, is self-managed abortions really that different from what happens in a clinic environment? I mean, the outcome is the same, one could argue, right? But I think for me, what's disturbing about it is the mentality behind it, which is like, there is no consideration. It is a celebration of abortion. And this is where it crosses the line for me. And again, I say this as a pro-choice woman. When you are celebrating abortion, when you are creating a shrine to worship abortion, like, that is where you're bordering on death cult. And it's about them, how do I put this? What they're trying to do is to shift the needle for how the public sees abortion. They want them to see it as a good thing, something like literally people are baking abortion cakes for each other. They're literally celebrating it like a birthday. It's not even just about normalizing it, though. They are normalizing it, but it's more about, like, it's not just even going to the store, right? We've normalized going to the store. This is about, let's have a birthday celebration about your abortion. I mean, it's really weird. And I think that it's the mentality. It's not necessarily the end result. It's the mentality behind it and the thought process behind it. All right, guys, we have about 5 more minutes, and I see this guy's in line. I'll try to take your questions. I just want to say that I love talking about this stuff. And I have some wonderful members of my community that also are crazy enough to talk about this stuff with me. We are at RV Site 213. You can come and hang out with us, talk about this stuff. Get a copy of my book if you want one. And also, we've got these really cool 3D printed porcupines with a gun that are only available at this event that you can come check them out if you want to. Designed by that guy right over there. So a round of applause for Phil. So you can come see that at the Unwoke Art Site, which is RV Site 213. We'll be here all week. Come hang out with us, sir.
So as far as the communication is concerned, talking about pedophiles, I can see how certain images of certain people going, they're all pedophiles, is not the correct...
It's not ideal.
Yeah, it's not ideal. What do you think of movies like What is a Woman or the Twitter account...
There had to be one, didn't it?
I'm just curious because I find the way he built that storyline was digestible by the other side.
I think that Matt Walsh changed exactly zero minds with that movie, mostly because they only had it behind a paywall for a really long time. There's value in what that movie is, right? I'm not going to say it's not valuable. There'll be people that disagree with me. When I'm presenting information about grooming and this sort of thing, I just try to be really factual about it. Like I have on my Substack, oh, this is relevant to this audience. Did you guys know that they're specifically targeting autistic children in schools through sex education? Like, and I've got the autistic sex ed training. I'm the only person on the internet that has this. We infiltrated it. We got the whole video of it. And so what they're doing is they're teaching your autistic children to masturbate with sex toys without telling you, surprise. Anyway, I think that just presenting the information and saying, here is what they're doing, are you comfortable with this, is actually because you're planting the seed to help other people figure it out. Now, some people might be convinced by What is a Woman. Like, I like that it got so much attention on Twitter, and maybe a lot of people saw it for the first time, maybe even if they were just hate watching it. There are a lot of really good people in What is a Woman. There are a lot of really good activists that are out there. So it might be just the key. Now that it's more publicly available and not behind a paywall, I think it could have more impact. And so I'll give him that. But I hate Matt Walsh in general, so.
The other example I was going to go for was Libs of TikTok and...
So Libs of TikTok is interesting because here's the thing about TikTok is like a lot of stuff on TikTok isn't real. So what people are doing on TikTok is they're posting things on TikTok to make viral videos, right? It doesn't mean it's actually real. And the full context of what's going on is so much more scary than what you're going to see on TikTok. So maybe it's a good entry level point to be like, that's something crazy. What's going on there? But in terms of actually understanding what's going on, I don't think it goes far enough. But that's my personal preference, and we might disagree. But I want to get to one more question before we have to wrap up. But let's continue the conversation later for sure. I'm totally open to it, Rich.
So kudos to you for doing all that hard legwork. I feel like when you were doing this talk, like I was living through Brave New World. I mean, almost everything you're talking about is in that. I'm curious how, because I listen to my nieces who are just coming through school, and they're talking about things like, you know, transgender animals. And like with a straight face and all this other stuff. And I'm like, how are people falling for, like, especially the Marxism? Because I read the Communist Manifesto. And I'm like, you contradict yourself on the same page. How is anyone taking this seriously? But so is it just that they're not getting any counter information? It's just this the monopoly of ideas that's coming through?
I think the short answer is that they're not teaching them how to think. They're not teaching them how to critically think. They don't know how to do it. And they don't know how to interact with ideas that they might disagree with, too. They have no frame of reference for this. That's my short answer, and Derek is telling me I really need to wrap up, so that'll have to be the answer for now. But thank you guys for coming out. Again, I appreciate it. RV213, if you want to continue the conversation, I would love to talk to you guys.